Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday. Happy spring and welcome to day 45 of our 49 days. Almost there. Today is called The Garden and the Swamp. And this relates to the third of the three, what I would call spiritual or shamanic minds. And we'll come back to what that experiential opportunity is and why. In a lot of traditions, it's considered a kind of foundational or fundamental mind or orientation to your growth in the sense of spiritual practice and all of that. And in the more immediate sense of shamanism, or what I might call applied spirituality, using that mind to help people heal. And I'll kind of bring that up as a theme of some of the other stuff we've been learning. So. Before I get into that, I want to just bring our attention back to how fun your attention is and, the importance of, narrative and state and, you know, thought versus actual experience or sensation. So just take a moment and check in with your inner horse, or your instinctual sense of aliveness or the body sense of just what it is that you're feeling and experiencing today. Almost the first day of spring, on a Wednesday morning, 8 a.m., 8:02, and ask yourself, how does the body feel? How does all your joints, you know, your spine, your feet, and to actually bring that not only to your attention, but by bringing your attention deeper into that part of your experience, you can actually bring aliveness to the body, especially if you're tired or getting over a flu. or something. Then there's the relationship with what we have come to call our cowboy, or the part of us that moves around through life, you know, within the body, but also holding and feeling and responding to a lot of sentiment and sensation that just has a lot to do with how our life is going, especially socially, and that might include money and a lot of the politics and details that we think about, but we think about not as philosophy or general day-to-day, you know, things to think about. We actually project a sense of meaning and sometimes need and potentially even survival onto those things. So that cowboy mind or self can really change the way you think and feel and exist, because if you pile up a lot of cowboy sentiment, you know, projections into the world about what's going to happen or what in the past has, you know, proved to be true about you, or, you know, and that's a theory. Your lens as an experiential embodied self, you know, in that part of your life may actually see your life as a lot harder than it really is. So it's a good idea also to bring that sense of aliveness and attention to the cowboy, with maybe a bit of truth serum, and really ask yourself, you know, to borrow Byron Katie's process, you know, is that true? And if you've never heard of Byron Katie's process called The Work, I would encourage you to check it out. If you're, especially if you're a thinking person and you spend a lot of time in your head, that's a really great way to hit the elevator button and get back into your body. And then we have what I've called the binoculars, or your existential view of life, you know, how it is that you frame things, how you look into big questions and see big pictures. And that self is fundamental to just being a human who's aware of being a human, and that you will die someday, and that there's big questions about that. So I'll come back to the binoculars in a moment, but just wanted to see if we could bring back that, you know, thing we were talking about a month ago as a way of just really quickly checking in with your state, you know, and where you're at, and bringing the aliveness and awareness to those aspects of your state so you can choose a little bit. Because otherwise we kind of sit in the audience of our life and, you know, hope it goes well, but aren't doing a lot of steering, you know, with what happens next. So since I'm just doing this quick review, I'm curious if you've had much thought about this whole idea of, you know, the visioning mind and what we get from dreams and journeys and even daydreaming and spontaneous ideas. And I suppose practically even the idea of using breath work and all of this embodied practice to potentially create a visionary experience. because that's, you know, on the menu of possible for sure. And I guess my question is for you intuitively, does that seem like a wise or a scary thing to do? You know, to use deep breath work to put yourself into a mild hallucinatory state. And just to be clear, that's not something that anyone really needs to do. It's not like that's the only way to God or something. And honestly, most of those practices are designed by and for people who are having a really hard time feeling aligned with the world that's around them. And we use those practices to find a way to come back into, you know, right relationship with our lives and the people around us. So I just wanted to put that out there, that if I'm talking about that as a progression about what we're learning, that's because it's just a progression of what we're learning. It's not something you need to do to be a badass or be cool or, you know, be a meditator in some way. It's just a really potent opportunity. And it does bring a lot more conscious attention to all those fiddly bits around, say, the tortoise breathing, which we'll come back to quickly in a bit. And, you know, it's, I think more than anything, those practices just focus on and helping us focus our attention in enough different directions at the same time that we get familiar with not being in the other familiar place of just going blah, blah, blah in our head. So there's sort of a subtle subterfuge going on with all these ancient meditation techniques. It's just to get us to shut up for 5 minutes. I like it when it happens. Shutting up is nice. So again, that kind of really high-tech breath work is mostly for healing really challenging things. Another question I would just throw out there is, have you, after yesterday, given any, I guess, thought, but more, I guess, inquiry into that idea of the sky mirror? And what it would be like for you to radiate your radiance, to emanate, you know, your true authentic self towards the sky, just on the chance that whatever is coming down from there and whatever we project onto that may actually be a very worthwhile and valid way for us to move through our life. And if I was to get poetic, I think it would go something like, you know, your sky mirror is a very beautiful way to experience your journey, you know, of your whole life, and also to explore your highest aspirations. You know, because with spiritual practice, that's a part of it is, you know, I'm a better person because of this, and I want maybe a sense of reflection or feedback from that. Yeah. So I just wanted to bring that up. And also, you know, from a lot of traditions, especially the indigenous traditions, the objective we have here is to become a human being. And that actually has teachings and practices and maybe conditions to it. You know, in the modern world, we're just all human beings just because we have a driver's license or something, or a birth certificate, I guess. One other thing is when you're working with that association of the sky mirror, which includes what we might call the ancestors, take a moment and remember that you are going to be the ancestors. And in a sense, you already are the ancestors, and that condition of becoming one is soon enough. But to actually feel what it is that all of those beings that got you here through all of the stuff they went through to get you here, that's actually who you are on the most fundamental level, you know, of instinct and visceral self. So if you're wanting some associations with the sky mirror, that's usually where I would go. So I want to bring a couple of details to your attention around the tortoise breathing, which... again, takes a little while to get all the contractions and coordinations going. The thing with the tortoise breathing that I want to be clear about, one is I'm just sort of committed to making sure you all have the whole practice that you would need to do it properly and safely. So I'm determined to make sure we get through all that in the 4 days left. So let's just do a couple of breaths, not too technical. Just hit deep inhale. And then if we exhale and allow that sense of the yolk or that golden yellowish light, which is actually more the color of squash, I think, than gold, but If we can feel that ball of light, and as we inhale, we allow it to expand, and exhale, allow it to kind of concentrate. And if you play with your tortoise breathing muscles a bit, the sense of concentration of the imagined little ball of light is reinforced by the commitment we have to all of that focus. So we talked about using the contractions to allow that sense of light to enter the spine in its own very gradual way, which can take, you know, minimum 15, 20 seconds and up to minutes to go from your sacrum to your head. So you cannot force it. But you can move your spine around and try and open up every vertebrae so that that light can, you know, be invited, kind of like inviting a cat into a door, just in the sense of how long it might take. So that way you have a sense of what that feeling's like. But there's another opportunity with the perineal floor and contraction when you use that little triangle thing, because you can get that sense of the yolk or that ball of yellow light, and you can move it around with contraction and with the tortoise breathing and pretty much every other kind of breathing, because wherever you move that ball of light can actually heal kind of a sense of woundedness or a sense of trauma or shame. By bringing just, you know, deep and powerful loving connection and, you know, patience and kindness to that part of your diaphragm or to that memory that may still hold in your gut. Or, and this is maybe more practical, imagine using that ball of light to move around to clear a lot of butterflies in your stomach you have about going into a job interview or some other, you know, difficult thing. You have to go to court or something. And you're trying to find a way to actually be your whole self, but all of those projected fears and consequences are keeping you out of the moment. So that's this chance to use your breath work and that light to not only feel better in the moment, to maybe be more functional when it really matters if you're a nervous person. So wanted to make sure that I brought up that, because it's actually really quite enjoyable, I find, to use your perineal floor contractions and your little triangle to just migrate around your whole solar plexus and your whole belly. You know, there's this idea that you start to feel like an electrical charge and warmness in the lower abdomen with a lot of meditation practice. And that's true. It's just a lot more true if you actually play with it in a practical way, not just sort of wait and see what the mojo will do to you. Okay, and again, that's this idea of Dantian. There's a couple of other very quick details we're going to practice together on Saturday and on Friday. And when you're doing the tortoise breathing, there's that rocking thing that we do. Eventually that rocking wants to turn into an undulating wave, not like a whip anymore. It's really slow through your spine, and sometimes it's actually going to gyrate too. And that sometimes you're going to want to undulate it and really mobilize your body to loosen up your diaphragm. Because when you really get into that kind of breath work, you are going to actually lose control of your body and your breath a bit. And your body will start teaching you how it wants to breathe to do that very instinctual thing. So a lot of spontaneous movement and gesture and things like that are also a part of it. So I just wanted you to give yourself permission, if you are practicing that, to really move freely and a bit wildly. And it doesn't time with the breath after you get started. After a while, it looks like you're having a bit of a fit. So just FYI. Qigong helmets on sale at Walmart soon. And again, that's usually why these practices aren't just thrown out there for people. But since they're online all the time now, I really wanted to add maybe a safer version to it. Okay. Another thing we're going to be learning are breath holds. One has to do with holding your breath in really full. One has to do with holding your breath in really empty. So if you're familiar with those practices, we're going to get into those Friday morning. But I wanted to just make sure that you're aware that there's still a few pieces to that practice, and that it actually is kind of crazy when you really get into it. Just reading someone's comment there. Okay, so today's thing is what I would call the Earth Garden, which I would also call a spiritual swamp. And that's not because I'm inherently a dark person. It's more about really giving ourselves permission to enter into compassion wisely. So there's this really great teaching that I received a long time ago on karma or kama. And I'm going to put a link to that podcast below. It is about an hour and a half long, but part of that podcast is a teaching on karma. The rest of it is this really kooky Buddhist teaching on, well, what I would call shape-shifting, but it's really a teaching on karma by going through all of these different experiences. So I'm going to give you what I would call the Cole's Notes version of this. But before I walk you through this very rapid series of ways to understand human life, the teaching has to do with each of these opportunities and many, many more below it are very, very powerful when you actually decide that that's who you have, that's how you are coming into being. And you'll see as I go through this what that kind of implies. But we're all coming into being in a state of being, excuse me, as a sentient being. And then we have this little glove over top of us, which is your ego and your name and your, you know, the time in the world where you showed up. But from a somewhat deeper indigenous perspective, there's this understanding that we're all just coming into being as whatever. It could be a dog or a cat or a mouse or you. So that's the theme. So imagine that you're coming into being as a being that lives on a luxury liner in the 1920s. Mostly just because the costumes were better. And you could have a meditation. And if you listen to that podcast, there's about, I think, 7 or 8 examples of different people. You could spend a month meditating every day on a different person on that big, scary luxury liner. Excuse me. Or the big, happy luxury liner. It's your luxury liner, after all. And that meditation would include coming into being as anyone, from the captain to the scullery maids to the people shoveling coal in the basement to anybody else you can imagine. And the practice, in the sense of karma, is to fully and wholeheartedly come into being in your imagination as that person. And all of the karma that they would experience being that person on that ship in the 1920s. And, you know, it's a very potent thing to do. And then as that teaching goes, we realize there's an insanity of trying to come into being with that kind of identity structure. So we jump off of the boat and we swim away from it. So then there's a teaching on a meditation practice of coming into being as all the different versions of people who jumped off of the boat. And then there's quite a few. And then we go into a practice where now we're going to swim away from the boat, and we're actually leaving the boat so far behind that there's no more connection to that. So now we're coming into being truly as a spiritual seeker, because we're swimming freely in the ocean of the Tao or whatever. And that's actually a really great metaphor for the commitment to a really consistent meditation practice, because you're just swimming and it's not about the boat anymore, and it's not about where you're going to get to. However, as the teaching goes, we eventually come to this island, and as we swim towards it, we arrive at this kind of swamp, and there's people there that kind of brush us off and give us a mint tea or something like that and push us down the beach to where there's this big beach party. So now we're basically coming into being as a being at a beach party in Valhalla, you know, in the sense of however you could imagine some spiritual ecotopia with really amazing people to spend time with and celebrate the experience of existing. And there's many, many, many different ways you could come into being at a giant, you know, endless luau, you know, in heaven or something like that. And there's a certain fatigue with that as well. So the teaching goes from all of the different people you could meditate on becoming, you know, in Valhalla in heaven or somewhere. And then the next part of the teaching is to go and climb this big mountain to get to the top of it. And you get to go through all of the different beings you would come into being as to be that kind of a spiritual seeker, where your job is now to climb past the skeletons and the churches and the other things that have to do with becoming connected to what is, And you want to get to the top of that mountain so you can reach up with your finger and see if somebody's reaching down with their finger and have that little magic Michelangelo moment. Because there is an aspiration in all of us with spiritual aspirations to actually touch the face of it all. So there's that teaching, which I think is also really cool. And then there's this teaching that says, well, now you've been everywhere. You know, you've been to Valhalla and the big dance party in heaven. You've climbed the peaks of you know, profound, deep work and practice and met your maker, so to speak. The next part of the teaching is that you walk back down to the swamp and you start cleaning people off who are coming off of the boat and swimming across the ocean of their practice so that they too can be welcomed to the real truth of existence, which really has a lot to do with what we call karma. So again, I'll throw the link for that podcast in there if you want to go deeper into that. If that doesn't sound like a really interesting, potent, rich form of meditation, in the sense of shape-shifting in your imagination to really build compassion and patience with people, then that's not your jam, so it's not going to really enrich your practice. But if that sounds like a really interesting way to spend some time, and I would say especially if you use cannabis, because it makes a highly associative state come into being, that might really help people unravel a lot of our opinions and judgments and impatience. So not a lot of breath work today, but a chance to sit and really embrace the garden of what it is to be on the earth. And here we are, kind of the first day of spring, when life is pouring back into the world. And here we are in this garden. And as beings that, you know, live in societies and have stories about who we are, the sooner we can get through the swamp of this, in the sense of karma and confusion and constraints and things, the sooner it will become a garden again. But, you know, if I was to borrow one last teaching before I sign off, human beings are called two-leggeds because we have a left foot and a right foot. So sometimes it would be, I think, a good idea to go deep into the inquiry of, you know, all the stuff between you and really being authentically connected to all of this, you know, which is the swamp, and then taking a step into the garden and feeling the gratitude and the reunion and the generosity and the beauty of this. And then, you know, oh yeah, and I got to work some stuff out. And then we go deeper. So it's I think, a beautiful journey to go from what's between you and profound living connection and the actual experience of that connection with the Garden of Eden or the Garden of Nelson or wherever you live. So just a few more things. So tomorrow we're going to do this really wacky thing, it's going to be a bit comedic. It's going to be called Mansplaining Reality and Spirituality. I'm going to give people a sense of actually the modern quantum physics sense of how this actually fits together, which hopefully will give us permission to go a little bit, I don't know, farther with our practice a little bit. And it is actually interesting to see how, how all of the ancient traditions are true and how, you know, what you experience in things like ayahuasca are fundamentally so powerful. So Friday, Qigong. Saturday, we're going to do a little mini rehearsal practice with all the crazy stuff for the tortoise breathing. And then Sunday, we'll do something magical for our last day. So hope to see you for the last few days. If you're doing the cleanse, it starts tonight at 6:30. And I'll be sending out an email to make sure everyone who's not local can watch the show. Have a lovely Wednesday. Enjoy the great week we're having out there, at least in the Kootenays, for spring. Blessings. Have a good day.